Copyright 2011, JKP, Radha Madhav Dham. All rights reserved.
Swami Nikhilanand is a disciple of Jagat Guru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. He resides at Radha Madhav Dham in Austin, Texas, which is the U.S. ashram of Jagat Guru Kripalu Parishad. He travels America preaching the philosophy of Sanatan Dharma as taught by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj.
In this series, he answers difficult questions about Hinduism which are commonly posed by people living in the scientific age. This series clears many doubts which the younger generation has about the validity of Hinduism and provides rational answers to these logical questions.
Yasyaikani Shwasita Kalamatha Valambya Jeevanti Loma Vilaja Jagadandanatha Vishnur Mahan Saihayasya Kala Vishesho Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Aho Vakiyam Stanakalakutam Jighansaya Yayadapya sadhi Lebhe gatim Dhatri uchitam Tato nyam Kam va Sharanam Vrajema Yo Brahmanam Vidadhati Purvam Yo Vai Vedanscha Prahinoti Tasmai Tagmanha Devamatma Buddhi Prakasham Mumukshurvai Sharanamaham Prapadye.
The Divine Souls will do a few minutes of Nam Sankirtan, and after that we'll have the conclusion of this series on Hinduism.
Bhajogiridhar Govinda Gopala Oh, bhajo giri dhare govinda gopala bhajo giri dhare govinda gopala bhajo giri dhare govinda gopala bhajo giri dhare बोले वृंदावन बिहारी लाल की जय. So far in this series, I've addressed several important questions about Hinduism, which especially in this time that we live in, and especially living in America, people tend to have in their minds. And especially the younger generation tends to have questions about why should we have faith in Hinduism? Is Hinduism logical? Meaning, if I have faith in God as described by the Hindu scriptures, is that scientific or is that a blind faith? I reconciled this. I reconciled the age-old debate between the desire for material progress and the desire for spiritual progress. I explained that while living in the world, we are supposed to desire happiness from God, yet still carry out our physical duties. I explained to you that having faith is very logical, because you can get proof for what you have faith in, because God is attainable. And the process of attaining God is very scientific. But God is beyond science, so material science cannot prove the existence of God. But by following the path to God, we can. I also discussed the other religions of the world and talked about how, although all religions worship the same God, they may call Him by different names, but they all worship the same God. Just not everyone knows that. They may think they're worshiping a different God in their religion, but they're not. There can only be one supreme God. And the description of God in Hinduism is the deepest and most complete, most detailed that we can find anywhere. That is why we have the description of God's different forms only in Hinduism. No other religion describes what God looks like. Not because God doesn't have a form, but because their description stays very vague. The description in Hinduism is of the same God, but in much more detail, and explaining why He has a form, and what are His main forms, and how are they interrelated. We covered all of this. We also talked about the path to God and how, although there are many paths described in our scriptures, described in various philosophies, many different practices, but there's only one way to attain God, and that is through bhakti. All paths are not the same. They all take you somewhere. They don't all take you to the same place. I mentioned briefly that faith is the joining factor of the mind. Just having faith in something or in anything is not enough. I told you that we don't do this in the world. We don't just carelessly have faith in anything. We don't trust every person we meet in the world. We don't just think, oh, I'll just start up any business, it doesn't matter, whatever I do will make me money. No, we're careful, we're discriminating. Well, on the spiritual path, we also have to be discriminating. Not every path takes you to the same place. Faith is the joining factor of the mind, which means that whatever you have faith in, that is what you will attain, and you will get the value of that thing or that person for whom you have faith. Krishna says in the Gita, Sattvanurupa sarvasya shraddha bhavati bharat shraddha mayoyam purusho yoyak shraddha sa eva saha. In other words, whatever you have faith in, that is what you will attain. Whatever you have faith in, that is how you yourself will become. Because it's a law of the mind that whatever you join your mind with, you start imbibing the qualities of that thing. So faith does not make something wrong right. Faith cannot change the value of something. It just gives you, your faith in that thing gives you whatever that value is. For example, let's say you have a family heirloom that's been handed down to you, but through generations. And every generation, when they handed it down to the next, let's say it's a brooch, a golden diamond brooch. And as they handed it down, they always said, oh, this is pure gold and very high quality diamond. So everyone believed that, oh, it's probably worth $50,000. And it was kept in the family. And let's say you ran into some financial difficulty and maybe you were going to lose your house. You couldn't afford the mortgage anymore. So you go to your safety deposit box. You take out that brooch. You go to the nearest jeweler. And you show it to him and you say, this is worth a lot of money, isn't it? I'm going to save my house by trading this in. And he says, I wouldn't say a lot of money. I'll give you maybe $50 for it. It's just brass and cubic zirconia. It's not gold and diamond. For generations you had faith in that thing. You had 100% faith in the value, $50,000 of that brooch. Your faith could not change the real value of that. So in the end, you got $50, not $50,000. In the same way, we have to follow the right path to attain the right thing. What are we trying to attain? We covered that in great detail in this week as well, that the ultimate goal is attaining God. And God is perfect happiness. So by attaining God, we can get perfect happiness. So not every path takes you to God. Many paths take you part of the way and leave you. The only path that takes you all the way is the path of bhakti, which means surrendering to God wholeheartedly. Then He graces you. Then He gives you everything He has, all of His possessions. So if someone is following some other path, believing that that is going to take them to God, after they die, they will see that whatever was the real value of that thing they were doing, that is what they will receive. They won't receive God realization just because they believed in what they were doing. It's the same with following any saint. A saint may speak beautiful words, say all the right things, but if that saint himself or herself has not attained God, they cannot give God realization to you. So you have to have faith in the right person as well. If someone is just talking about God, but inside they have all worldly desires, desire for name, desire for fame, desire to be appreciated, that is what's in their heart, and no matter how nice the words are coming out of their mouth, that's not what you're getting. If you have faith in them, it means your heart is connected to their heart. You're going to get what's in their heart. Your faith cannot fix a wrong thing. Your faith is just the joining factor of your mind, which allows you to take on the qualities of that thing. And conversely, if the right thing comes along and we don't have faith in it, again, we won't get the benefit because we didn't join our mind with that real saint or with that real path. So joining our mind with someone or something means having faith in that path, following that path, following that saint. We only get the real benefit when we do that. We have to join our mind with them. We have to have faith, but it has to be in the right person or in the right path. So, in fact, the responsibility is on us. If we are uneducated in these spiritual matters and we choose to follow a wrong person who fools us with his flowery language, but from inside has nothing divine to give, that's not his fault. Of course, that person will also be punished for posing as something he's not and deluding people away from the true path. Yes, he will get what's coming to him, but it was our responsibility to be properly educated, to seek out the real knowledge and to know and be able to discriminate what is the right thing and what is the wrong thing. That's up to us. Once we die and we're going wherever we're going according to our karma and according to whatever we have faith in, had faith in that life, then we can't blame anybody else. We're just going to get the consequence of wherever we attached our mind. So it's important to understand the correct path, which is why today I'm going to explain to you how to do bhakti according to our scriptures. We got to this point that I told you only bhakti can take you to God. But this word bhakti is also really tossed around quite a bit. A lot of people do bhakti or appear to be doing bhakti, but are they actually doing bhakti which will take them to God? I'll tell you that we have all of us sitting here, done bhakti, and probably out of our unlimited lifetimes that we've lived, we must have done bhakti uncountable trillions of times. Yet here we are, we're still not God realized. So did we ever really do bhakti? No. Not even once. So today, as we sit here and we only have very limited time left in this series, let me just cover a few important points that have to be remembered for someone who wants to do bhakti in order to attain God. This is the kind of bhakti I'm talking about. You want to attain God. Then how should you do bhakti? First and foremost, Ved says, Bhavagrahya manidakhyam. God is looking at your bhav, not at your physical actions. So it means that bhakti is done with the mind. If you forget everything else I told you today, just remember this one thing. Where your mind is, that's where you're doing bhakti. If your mind is in God, you're doing bhakti of God. And if your mind is in the world, you're doing bhakti of the world. So bhakti is done with the mind. This is why Krishna told Arjuna in the very end of the Gita, Manmana bhava madbhakti. Madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosime. Arjun, give your mind to me. Very simple. That's what he's asking for. Our bhav, our bhavana, our man. We have to give that to him. In the Bhagavatam, bhakti is defined like this. Mano gatiravichinna yatha gangam bhasom budhau. The uninterrupted flow of loving thoughts from your mind to God. Uninterrupted, just like Gangaji flowing towards the ocean. Avichin, unbroken. So again, the definition of bhakti is that your mind has to be in God. Your thoughts should be in God. Then you are doing bhakti. The Chaupai that I ended with yesterday gives this same message. Jap tap niyam yoga nij dharma shruti sambhav nana shubh karma gyan daya dam tirath majjana jahan lagi dharm kahe shruti sajjan agam nigam puran aneka padhe sune kar phal prabhu eka tav pad pankaj priti nirantar sab sadhan kar yah phal sundar. Tulsidas ji says all of the physical forms of bhakti are merely the outer appearance. The real thing is what is going on the inside. So the real meaning of doing all of these things that he named, jap, tap, pujan, pat, tirthyatra, whatever we may be doing, these are all the physical, outward way of doing bhakti, but the real meaning of doing them is to develop tava pada pankaj priti nirantar. To develop unbroken love means continuous loving remembrance in our heart of God's lotus feet. That is the true pal, that is the true reason that we do any physical practice of bhakti. Simply to develop love for God in our heart. Shandilya Maharshi says in his Bhakti Sutra that what is the definition of bhakti? The definition of bhakti is that it is love. That's it. Prema Swarupam, Naradji also says. Parma Prema Rupa. Shandilya Maharshi says, what is bhakti? Prem. It is love. So no matter what physical formality of bhakti we're doing, if there's no love for God in our heart, then it doesn't count as bhakti. It's an empty physical action. There are two kinds of bhakti. Sasanga bhakti and anasanga bhakti. Sang means the attachment of your mind. So doing physical formalities of bhakti like puja, kirtan, visiting holy places, bowing down at the temple, whatever physical formality we're doing and calling it bhakti, if the attachment of our mind is not in God, then that is anasanga bhakti. But if we sit and are physically doing nothing, but our mind is in loving remembrance of God, that is sasanga bhakti. Sasanga bhakti purifies the heart. Because if you attach your heart to God, it gets purified. Very simple. He's like a big fire. Whatever you throw in the fire, it burns. Throw something pure in the fire, it burns. Throw something dirty and impure in the fire, that burns too. The fire does not become impure no matter what you throw into it. And it has the power to purify anything, but that thing has to touch the fire. So your mind has to touch God. What does that mean? Remember Him. That's it. If you're lovingly thinking of Him, your mind is in contact with God and your mind is getting purified. And that is the ultimately, that's why we're doing bhakti, to purify our mind. That has other side benefits like negativities of the mind get reduced, anger gets reduced, jealousy, desires, attachments all get reduced as our mind gets purified. And ultimately, when the mind is fully purified, you receive God's ultimate divine grace. You receive His Swarup Shakti. A God-realized saint gives you his Swarup Shakti. This is the true initiation. A lot of people think that initiation is just receiving a mantra or a mala or something from a saint. True initiation happens after you've done bhakti to purify your heart. Then the saint can give you the divine power, if he has it. A God-realized saint helps his followers to understand how to do bhakti, how to attach the mind to God, to purify the heart. Then when their heart is fully purified, he gives God's Swarup Shakti, his personal divine power, into the heart, into the purified heart of that devotee, and that makes the devotee's mind and senses divine. Then the devotee can receive God's unlimited divine bliss, now that his mind, heart, everything is divine. So that is real diksha, that is real initiation, when the devotee reaches that point and the saint gives the divine experience, the divine power to that devotee. So this is why we're doing bhakti, to purify our heart, to get to that point. So if our heart is not in God, if our mind is not in God, how is it going to get purified? It's simple logic. It's not going to. So by physically doing any bhakti, I'm doing puja with my hands. Is my heart getting purified? Let's say I'm thinking of, did I leave the gas on in the house when I left today? And you're sitting doing puja in the temple. So where's your mind? Your mind is over there. Is your heart getting purified by your hand doing the puja? Absolutely not. Let's say you're singing kirtan, but you're thinking about the TV show you watched earlier today. But your mouth is singing the words of the singing God's name. Will that purify your heart? No. Moving your mouth and your tongue cannot purify in here. We have to make God and our mind come together. So that is sasanga bhakti. Just doing bhakti with our body is like multiplying by zero. It doesn't matter what you have, multiply a million by zero. What's the outcome? Zero. Do a million hours of puja, but don't have your mind in God even for 1 second, you just multiplied by zero. Million hours of kirtan, but keep the mind attached in the world the whole time, you just multiplied by zero. So physical bhakti is meant to give us a way to engage our mind or help our mind stay focused on God. Just the physical pat, puja, kirtan, that doesn't purify the mind. That's just a helper to help us keep our mind in God. So we end up doing the opposite many times. We forget about God and we think we're doing something good by physically doing the bhakti, which it's definitely not bad, but it's not purifying our heart. So it's not true. It's not the true form of bhakti. So keep that in mind first and foremost, that bhakti must be done with the mind. If bhakti had to be done with the body, then people who had physical limitations, they would have to get a free pass for God realization. Let's say someone says, oh, Krishna, my hands and feet don't work, so I can't do your puja. So give me free God realization. I can't do bhakti to you. Krishna says, no. Bhavagrahya manidakhyam. I'm not looking at your hands and feet, I'm looking in here at your bhav. Give your mind to me and I'll give you God realization. Walk 1,000 miles in parikrama or visiting holy places, you won't get anything. Give your mind to me, I'll give you God realization. Oh God, I'm Gunga. My voice doesn't work. I can't sing your name. I can't even say your name. Krishna says, doesn't matter. Don't take my name even one time, but give your mind to me and I'll give you everything. So this is the first and foremost thing to remember, that bhakti is done from the mind. Number two, if you want the ultimate thing, then don't ask God for any worldly thing in the name of bhakti. Remember our goal. We clarified the goal. The goal is perfect happiness, unlimited and everlasting. So I explained in quite a bit of detail that that kind of happiness is not in any material thing. It's our own experience. It's not even in swarg. That kind of happiness is only in God. Anyone who fully surrenders to God, God will give them what they are asking for. So let's say you fully surrender to God and you ask Him for a material thing and He gives you that. The same material things that you've been enjoying for uncountable lifetimes, which have never fully satisfied you, why are you still asking God for more of the same? You've been Indra, and even that didn't satisfy you. You've been the king of the world, queen of the world. We all have, many times. None of it satisfied us. You were no more satisfied then than you sit here today. As you sit here today, your level of dissatisfaction, that's the level of dissatisfaction we all have all the time, because we can never be satisfied with material things. We need divine happiness. So we go to God and ask Him for material things. That's like going to the best sweet shop and saying, please show me what chappal you have for sale here. Do you have any old shoes I can buy? And the shop owner is saying, what? We have the best, most delicate sweets in the whole world, and you're asking me for shoes? Go, there's a shoe salesman down the way. Go to him. Why are you coming to me for that? You don't need to come to me. In the same way, God is thinking, Aamai bhaje mange sansar ei badamurk. In the words of Chaitanya Mahaprabhuji, Krishna says, you worship me and you ask me for dirty worldly things? Dirty compared to Him. It doesn't make sense. The goal is Him, so ask Him for Him. Very simple. You have unlimited divine happiness. You are Sat Chit Anand. Give me that. Don't ask Him for more of the world. It's illogical. It might be our habit, so break your habit. Break it today. From this day forward, don't ask God for worldly things. You're all logical, educated people, all of us here. We're logical in all worldly matters. Then bring that same logic into spirituality. It does not make sense to ask God for worldly things. I don't care if for generations your family has done just that. I don't care if that's what you were taught. I don't care if that's what you've done for your whole life. Use your logic. Does it make sense? All the examples we see in our scriptures of, like, Dhruv asking for a worldly thing. He didn't ask the way we asked. He fully surrendered first. Vishnu came to him and gave him that thing. So he had full faith and full surrender. Then he was awarded that thing. So we ask with partial or a fraction of faith, please give me this thing. And secondly, those examples in our scriptures, they're just to get us started in the direction of God, like a little incentive that a really worldly person who isn't even desiring God realization, at least he'll see, oh, Dhruv surrendered to God and God gave him this worldly thing. Well, I want worldly things, so I'll start doing devotion to God. It gets you started in the right direction. But now you're evolved enough that you can realize, okay, that was a good start, but that's like kindergarten in terms of stages of bhakti. Now I have to graduate. I have to go higher. I'm not going to ask God for worldly things anymore. The goal is for me to attain God's divine love, so I'm going to ask Him for that. If I ask him for the world, I'll never get his divine love. And in addition to that, if I'm asking him for the world, it means I'm still attached in the world. Again, the same problem comes, that I say I'm doing bhakti, but I'm asking God for the world. So it means my mind is in the world, it's not in God. So how will that purify my mind? So this is the second condition, the second really important thing to keep in mind. The first is, bhakti is done with the mind. And the second one is, that if we really want to attain divine happiness, then from this day forth, we shouldn't ask God for worldly things. Tam bhranshayami sampadbhyo yasya chechamyanugraham. Consider this. Krishna says in the Bhagavatam that if I'm going to grace somebody, I'll take away the objects of his attachment. I won't give him more. If I give him more, he'll get more attached in the world and he'll forget me totally. At least he's remembering me a little bit now. So what am I going to do? I'll take away something else he's attached to. Then he'll remember me more. Sukha ke mathe sil pare nama hiye te jaya balihari va dukh ki. Tulsidas ji says that happiness, that sansari sampatti, which makes me forget God, he says, let that be taken away from me, let it be destroyed. Jo pal pal naam rataya, but that dukh, that suffering or unhappiness that makes me remember God, balihar on that. That thing is the greatest. That's what I should ask you for. Kunti asked Krishna for that. Vipada santu na shashvat ityadi. Bhagavatam. Krishna, give me suffering at every step of my life. That's what she asked for when Krishna said, I'll give you a boon, ask for anything. She said, give me misfortune and suffering so that I can remember you, so that I can feel destitute. So keeping all of this in mind, we see that the scriptures and saints are showing us that the best thing we can ask for is to ask for nothing at all. In fact, go to this point of not even asking for liberation. We talked about attaining God in three different ways. Attaining formless God, that's liberation, mukti. Then you can attain Almighty God, or you can attain the divine love form of God. So Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, actually, Kapil Bhagwan says in the Bhagavatam, Sarshti samipya salokya sarupya ikatvam apyuta diyamanam nagrihnanti vinamatsevanam jana. Even if I offer liberation to one of my devotees, he won't take it. Diyamanam, I'm giving it to him, nagrihnanti. He says, no, I don't want liberation. I want your divine love. So if we ask for any worldly thing, we remain bereft of the best thing we could have gotten. Even if we ask for liberation, as I explained, we merge into formless God and we don't even get to experience our own blissfulness. So that's not the best thing either. If we attain Almighty God, we get to enjoy the unlimited bliss of God. But there's even something beyond that. I explained this to you a few days ago, that if you love God with feelings of friendship or servitude, or like He's your beloved, or even like He's your son or daughter, it means you're not even asking Him for liberation. You're not asking Him for anything. You're just saying, I love you and I want to be with you. So you're just giving yourself to Him. So if you just give yourself to Him with no desire, not even asking Him for liberation, He gives Himself to you. when Krishna gives himself to you, it means he's given everything else to you as well, because everything else belongs to him. The whole divine world belongs to him. This whole material world belongs to him. Why ask him for little things along the way? Just say, I want you. If you are mine, then all of this is mine too. Very simple. And if I get you, then I won't even care about how much of anything else I have, because I'll have you. You will be mine. When he gives himself to you, it means that he loves you the same way you love him, with the same relationship. It means that he desires to make you happy, and you desire to make him happy, and you get to be with him. Actually be with God. Not just see him, but be with him. Interact with him. We call those leelas, when God interacts with his devotees. Imagine going to his divine world, getting a divine body, so you still have your personality, and you get to be with Radha Krishna in the divine world, and you get to be with them in any way you want. Do any leela you want. Any leela you think of, it just happens automatically. And in that, you're experiencing unlimited divine bliss, which goes on growing and increasing every moment. That's the ultimate thing. There's nothing beyond that in the divine world. So that is the absolute ultimate goal of every soul, to get that kind of relationship with God. So to get that, don't ask for anything else. Do what you have to in the world. Don't ask God for worldly things when you're doing bhakti. Keep your mind focused on the goal. I want your divine love. I want that divine status. I want that divine relationship with you. So, bhakti is done with the mind, and don't ask God for any worldly thing or even liberation. Just surrender yourself to him with a desire to be with him and love him and serve him in the divine abode. Thirdly, this is something important which a lot of people don't know. You can only attain one form of God. I explained that there's only one God anyway. He just happens to eternally exist in uncountable forms. So by worshipping one form of God, we're worshipping God. We don't have to, it's not required that we worship God in all of his forms. It's not required. God is God. Worship him in any form and you have worshipped God. Normally, people follow a more general kind of worship where they worship many forms of God. But that is not bhakti for God realization. Again, it's not wrong. There's nothing bad about it. It's a general form of worship. But it's not bhakti to get God realized. Because God realization means you're going to attain God in one form. That form you worshipped, that's the form he's going to come to you in. Depending what form of God you attain, you will have a different experience, even though God is God in whatever form he is. So according to the experience you want to have, according to the relationship you want to have with God, you choose that form of God and you worship that form of God. You respect all of his other forms. You can even do puja to them. But when you're doing puja to them, when you're doing devotion to them, like let's say Ganesh Chaturthi just passed. So we do devotion to Ganesh Ji on that day. But let's say you're doing bhakti to attain Krishna. But today you're going to worship Ganesh. So what should you ask him for? Ganesh Ji, please multiply my feelings of love for Krishna. Help me get more Krishna bhakti. That's just an example. What I'm saying is, whatever form of God you're worshipping, if you're worshipping multiple forms, your feelings will not be focused. And you can't develop your love for them quickly. The feelings have to be focused on one form of God. So it means you decide, I want to attain you in this form, and you focus all of your devotion on that form of God, but still give full respect to all the other forms, but you know, this is the form I want to attain. God has no objection from His side. He doesn't care which form you choose. It's up to you. He gave you a choice so you could find something that appeals to you. He didn't give you a choice so you could get frazzled and stressed out that, oh, I worship this form but not this form, and I have... That's not why He's in multiple forms. He's in multiple forms so that you can have a choice. Oh, but I've been worshiping all of these forms for my whole life. Now, let's say someone decides, I want to attain Radha Krishna, so I'm going to worship only them. I'm going to focus my bhakti on that form. But will Shivji be disappointed? Will Hanumanji get angry with me? No! It's their form. It's not somebody else. It's like you have a picture of your husband, a photo on the wall, and one day you take that photo down and you put up a more recent photo. Or you put up a photo of him dressed differently. So when your husband comes home, is he going to rebuke you? No, because you didn't put some other man's photo up. You put a different photo of him. So it doesn't matter, whatever jo bhi aapko achha lage. So it's the same with God. No form of God would ever have any negative reaction because you're still worshipping Him, just in a focused way. Normally people try to worship several forms because we're worshipping with worldly desires. That if this form of God doesn't give me what I want, maybe this form will. Or this form gives this thing, and this Lakshmi gives this, Hanumanji gives this, Shivji gives this, Saraswati gives this. So I worship all of them. But all of those are worldly desires. So I'm talking about for God realization. We're not asking God for those worldly things, so it doesn't matter. Yani kani cha mitrani kartavyani shatani cha. This means it's good to have many, many friends, because if one lets you down, maybe the other one will fulfill your desire. So we don't need to do bhakti to God in that way anymore. We're not going to ask Him for worldly things. So choose one form. Again, that doesn't mean you can't give respect or even do puja of the other forms. It's fine, whatever occasion is happening. But in your heart, that form of God is your goal. And you focus all of your feelings towards that form. And God has no objection. So then, how do we do bhakti? How do we actually practice it? As I said, lovingly remembering God, thinking of God, in the form you want to attain, that's the core, that's the essence. And along with that, we have many, many physical forms of bhakti which have been explained in our scriptures. So out of those, is there one which is most relevant, most effective for the time that we're living in, Kaliyug? In fact, the saints and scriptures have given importance to one main form of bhakti to help us remember God. And that is kirtan. Kaler doshanidherajan nastihyeko mahan gunah. Kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sangha. Param Vrajet Bhagavatam. Although Kaliyug has many, many faults, it's like the ocean of bad things, yet there's one great good quality about Kaliyug, which is in Kaliyug, there's no great worshipping formalities which are prescribed or required. Just do kirtan. Through kirtan, you can reach Krishna. In fact,
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ji goes to this point of saying, Harer namaiva 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 mama jivanam kalau nastyeva 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 gatiranyatha. He says in Kali Yuga, there is no other way to reach God. Imagine. He didn't just say it once, he said it three times. Nastyeva, nastyeva, nastyeva. He's saying with that much force that in Kali Yuga, kirtan is the only thing that will actually keep your mind absorbed in remembering God so that you can attain God in this life. Tulsidas ji said the same thing. Kali nahi karma na bhagati viveku Ram naam avalamban eku. He says in Kali Yuga, karma and vaidhi bhakti are not recommended. Karma means all those prescribed ritualistic actions of the Vedas which people do in order to go to swarg. He says that's impossible in Kali Yuga. And bhagati viveku means vaidhi bhakti. Doing bhakti according to all the prescribed formalities of the Vedas. Following all the rules of how to sit, what mantra to say, what time, how to dress, what to offer. All these prescribed methods of worship, Tulsidas ji says, not for Kali Yuga. Ram naam avalamban eku. There's only one recourse in Kali Yuga, that is to sing Ram's name. So Kali Yuga is great because nothing is required of us in terms of difficult forms of devotion. Just sit, think of God and chant His name, chant His gunas, chant His leelas. But remember that kirtan alone does not take you to God. The kirtan is the physical practice you're doing to help your mind remember God, because that is the essence. Alodhya sarva shastrani vicharya cha puna puna idamekam sunishpannam dhyeyo narayano hari. Padma Puran. Vedavyas ji, a dissension of Bhagwan himself, who rewrote all the scriptures 5,000 years ago, he said, I did manthan of all of these scriptures, Vedas, Puranas, Darshan Shastras. I went through them again and again to try to find out what is the essence. So when you churn something, the essence comes to the top. The cream comes to the top. So what came to the top? He said, Dhyan, Rup Dhyan. Remembering God, lovingly remembering God. We say Rup Dhyan, that's what Kripaluji Maharaj says. Dhyan means you could be meditating on anything. He says, no, Rup Dhyan. The form of God you want to attain, see that form in your mind. Then chant that form of God's name, Leelas, Gunas. So Rup Dhyan plus Kirtan, and you have the package. You have the combination you need to get to God in this lifetime. Rup Dhyan includes six things. Naam Rup Leela Guna Dham Jan. So if you're faithfully remembering God's name, not just saying His name from your mouth, but in your heart, this is, I'm saying Govinda, and this is Krishna's name. So it means your heart is in Him and you're faithfully taking His name. That counts as Rup Dhyan. Or you're actually visualizing His form. Or you're meditating on His gunas. Oh, He's so kind. He loves me so much. He's so beautiful. He's so charming and playful. Or you're meditating on His dham. His divine abode is also the expansion of His personality. So you can think of His form, and you're surrounded by His divine abode, and you're there as well, and you can imagine, I'm Mother Yashoda, or I'm a gopi, or I'm a Gwalbal. Or you can just see His dham. Maybe you're not good at imagining
forms like that, and you just imagine, oh, I'm sitting in Krishna's divine abode and he's somewhere over there, I can't see him right now. That's fine too, you're meditating on his divine abode. Or his saints, gopis, gwalbals, Mother Yashoda, his saints are also one with him. And of course his leelas combines all of that. If you're meditating on any leela, then his form is there, his abode is there, the other divine associates are there, his gunas are being reflected, his personality is being revealed through that leela that he's performing. And whatever leela you want to think of, something you saw in the Bhagavatam, something you saw Surdas wrote, something Meera sang, something you imagined yourself, it doesn't matter. Because as long as your mind is in God, it's getting purified. So keeping your mind in any one of those six things, Naam, Roop, Leela, Guna, Dham, Jan, that counts as bhakti. And how to keep your mind engaged? Sing kirtan, which uses God's names. God tells about God's form, His decorations, His leelas, His gunas, His saints, His abode. All of these are described in kirtan written by great saints. So they're the helper for us to keep our mind in God. And if you're not a visual person, engage your other senses as well. Use your nose. Can you smell Krishna's fragrance of His body, of His hair, of the oil He puts in His hair, of some subtle, deep perfume He's wearing, of the flowers in His divine abode, or of His flower mala? Use your ears. Can you hear the jingling of His anklet? Can you hear the sound of His voice? Can you hear His flute? Can you hear Him talking to you? Use your sense of touch. Hold His hand. Give Him a hug. So in all of these ways, or in any of these ways, if you're doing that, your mind is in God. So this is very simple, because there's a lot of variety in that, so your mind won't get bored. Keep changing the kirtan, sing a new song, a fast one, a slow one, a description of this leela, that leela, older Krishna, younger Krishna, a leela with gopis, a leela with Mother Yashoda, a leela with sakhas. It's up to you. Keep changing. Keep thinking of different things, but as long as your mind is doing Roop Dhyan of Krishna. And along with that, you're doing kirtan. And if you've been practicing something else your whole life, again, just like changing forms of God, as I was saying, maybe your whole family has been a Shiv Bhakt your whole life. And that's good, and you can keep worshipping Shiva. There's no reason not to. But let's say you say, no, I want to have that relationship with Krishna. I want to be His best friend. So I'm going to do devotion to Krishna now. Shiva will not be upset with you. Believe me, Shiva is another form of Krishna. It doesn't matter to Him. In the same way, changing ways that you worship does not upset God. Oh, for generations my family has done this kind of puja. And now Swami Nikhilanand is telling me, just sit and do kirtan and Roop Dhyan. Oh no, I can't do that. Okay, it's okay. What you're doing is not wrong. But all I'm saying is, if you want to change, God has no objection. Your objection is in here. God has no objection. So whatever form of worship is recommended by the scriptures for Kaliyug, why don't you do that? That makes logical sense as well. God is not looking for a reason to punish you. He's looking for a reason to grace you. Just put your mind in Him and He will grace you. So in this way, I've described briefly, but I've given you the important points of how to do bhakti. And if you do bhakti in this way, you will see progress. In this series, I described for you that you need to have the exact goal in mind. Where are we trying to get to? That's like the address. Then you need to know how to get there. That's the path. That's bhakti. And the integral form of bhakti was just explained to you today. And the ultimate goal, we also explained, is to get God's divine love. Now along the way, if you're following the right path, let's say you're following your GPS, you'll see as the map goes by, oh, this landmark is there. This street is coming up. And when I pass this street, I know I'm going in the right direction. And after that, oh, a couple blocks later, my destination is coming up. So like that, there are certain things that happen to you if you practice bhakti the way I just described, which are like indicators that you're doing the right thing. You're actually doing bhakti and you're moving towards God realization. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ji refers to this in a couple of his verses from his Ashtapadi. He says, Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnuna manina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. You will develop more humbleness. A saint once said that the beginning of humbleness is when you realize that you're not humble at all. We hear this word humbleness and we think, oh yes, I'm humble, I respect others. But when you actually start to do bhakti and your heart starts to purify, the first feelings of real humbleness come in the heart and you feel, oh, I'm so proud. I'm not humble at all. That's the beginning of humbleness. Chaitanya Mahaprabhuji says the ultimate limit of humbleness is Trinadapi sunichena. A blade of grass bends over and when people step on it, he doesn't retaliate. He's just humble, even under people's feet. A tree is so forgiving and forbearing that no matter how much abuse we heap on it, he still keeps giving us fruit and shade. So he actually says these are the indications of progress on the path of bhakti, that you start developing real humbleness from inside. You really feel humble and you're forbearing and forgiving. And amanina, from inside you stop feeling like you have to demand that others respect you. But manadena, you genuinely feel a respect for other people. That God is in their heart. The same God I love is sitting in his heart. He goes on to say, Nayanam galadashrudharaya Vadanam gadgadrudhaya Gira Pulakair nichitam vapu kada Tavanam grahane bhavishyati. He says, O Krishna, when will that time come when taking your name, singing your name, my feelings for you will be so strong that my throat will choke with emotions in longing for you. Tears will come from my eyes. My hairs will stand on end. I'll feel that much of a thrill just in taking your name and remembering you. When that happens, I know I'm progressing because I have real feelings. I'm not just going through the motions of doing bhakti, I actually feel something for you. And then I know that I'm progressing. Yuga itam nimeshena chakshusha pravrisha itam Shunyaitam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. He says, when will that time come when the tears from my eyes will be like a steady stream? Because my longing for you is so great that I can't think of anything else. The whole world is blank for me and I desire only you. So as your desire for Krishna increases, that is the indication of how much you're progressing. The two happen side by side. You want to know how far along the path you are? Ask yourself, what is the balance of my desire? Compare your desire for God to your desire for the world. That's how far you've come on the path, or how far you have to go. What's the balance? 80-20? 50-50, 40-60. So If you're truly following the path of bhakti, the balance will start shifting towards God. Your desire for God will grow and your desire to enjoy the world will start reducing. But both always add up to 100%. We always have 100% desire. It's just a question of where is that desire turned towards? Towards God or towards the world?
Cheto darpanam arjanam bhavamaha dava agni nirvapanam shreya kairav chandrika vitaranam vidyavadhu jivanam Anandam Budhivardhanam Pratipadam Purnamritasvadanam Sarvatmasnapanam Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam.
He says, as you practice true bhakti and your heart is purified, your worldly desires which normally burn your heart, they cool off. And you start to experience the further cooling effect of the contentment, the satisfaction of true happiness through Krishna's grace. So through bhakti to Him, you actually receive His grace, not in the form of worldly things, but in the form of true happiness in your heart. And that goes on multiplying more and more and more up until God realization.
Yatha yathatma parimrijyate sau mat punya gatha shravana bhidhanai tatha tatha pasyati vastu sukshmam chakshuryathaivanjana samprayuktam
Bhagavatam. Shri Krishna says to Uddhav that by meditating on my leelas, by meditating on my form, by singing my leelas and my name with this meditation, you purify your heart. So in the beginning, your meditation is like an imagination. But the more your heart purifies, the more real Krishna's presence becomes. Just like if you had a temporary blindness due to something. Something got in your eyes and you're temporarily blind. And as you apply a medication to your eyes, your vision starts returning slowly, gradually. So in the beginning, you don't see anything. Then you start to see, oh, there's some light. Then, oh, there's some forms, but it's black and white and it's very fuzzy. Oh, it's starting to become more clear now and I can see colors. And then your vision ends up returning 100%. Something like that, as you do bhakti to Krishna, in the beginning you try to think of Him and your mind wanders. But the more your heart purifies, the more your heart gets attached to Him, the more real that vision of Krishna is. Like first the veil between you and Him is really thick. That veil gets thinner and thinner and thinner. So the experience becomes more real and more intense because real Krishna is there in front of you. It's just that right now you can't see Him. And when your heart is fully purified, you become fully surrendered. A God-realized saint gives you Swarup Shakti. Your heart, mind, senses, everything becomes divine. He removes the veil of Maya and Krishna is standing there. Real Krishna. And you stay with Him forever. This is how the path of bhakti works, and that is the ultimate goal which any soul can reach by adopting what I just explained to you today. So we'll spend the last little bit of time that we have here today doing some kirtan, try to put into practice what I explained to you about Rup Dhyan. So we'll be singing a very simple description of Krishna's qualities and his looks. What is he like? So use that to help your meditation. Keep meditating on the form of Krishna as we sing this kirtan.
Rati ras sagar sab gun agar natvar nagar shamare रस सागर सब गुण आगर नटवर नागर श्याम रे रसिक रंगीले गुण गर्वीले रसिक रंगीले गुण गर्वीले रसिक रंगीले गुण गर्वीले छैल छबीले श्याम रे छैल छबीले श्याम रे रति रस सागर सब गुण आगर नटवर नागर श्याम रे चिन्मय तनु नीले पट पीले चिन्मय तनु नीले पट पीले हीले धरि वसुयाम रे हीले धरि वसुयाम रे रति रस सागर सब गुण आगर नटवर नागर श्याम रे सरस रसीले नैन नुकीले सरस रसीले नैन नुकीले कीले धरि वसु कीले मन ब्रज दाम रे कीले कि नंद दुलारे गोपिन प्यारे नंद दुलारे गोपिन प्यारे मुरली वारे श्याम रे मुरली वारे श्याम रे रति रस सागर सब गुण आगर नटवर नागर श्याम रे नैनन तारे प्राण हमारे नैनन तारे प्राण हमारे नैनन तारे प्राण हमारे कामरी वारे श्याम रे कामरी वारे श्याम रे नित नवरंगी गोपन संगी नित नवरंगी गोपन संगी ललित त्रिभंगी श्याम रे ललित त्रिभंगी श्याम रे रति रस सागर सब गुण आगर नटवर नागर श्याम रे रति रस सागर सब गुण आगर नटवर नागर श्याम रे रति रस सागर सब गुण आगर नटवर नागर श्याम रे
बोलिए श्रीमत युगल सरकार की जय।